You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera. I'm here with my friend John Kirkwood, who's the pastor at Grace Gospel Fellowship Church in Bensonville, Illinois. And we're excited to have our banquet speaker as a guest today. Her name is Judith Reisman, Dr. Judith Reisman. Judith, are you on the line?
I think I am.
And Judith, it's a privilege to have her speaking at our banquet, which is Saturday, October 27th. It's at Christian Liberty Academy in Arlington Heights, Illinois. And Judith, we're going to talk about, I've given you a title. I hope you stick to it for your talk. And the title that I gave you, although I'm sure you're going to veer off it because you have all these all this knowledge, is Pedophilia, the Next New Normal. And, of course, that refers to the New Normal TV show. I can't remember which network's that on. Is that NBC, John? I think it's NBC. The New Normal about two homosexual men who want to have a woman who gets artificially inseminated so that they can have
NBC.
A baby. So-called. But anyways, so Judith, we're excited to have you, but let me reiterate about the banquet. It's coming right up, John. It's Saturday, October 27th. It's at Christian Liberty Academy, which is in Arlington Heights. They're a great school. A little background, we have it at Christian Liberty every year because we were tired of getting harassed out of hotels by the Gay Liberation Network, which is it's a homosexual hate group, and they're so hateful that when our banquet was attacked with a brick thrown through the windows at Christian Liberty Academy last year, it was a sort of a homosexual hate crime, if you believe in the concept of hate crimes. Gay Liberation Network said that they would not condemn the brick attack against us if it was motivated by hatred of our mission. So to me, that's the sign of a real hate group. If you can you imagine, John, ever saying you would not condemn a violent or a brick attack against a homosexual group? I can't imagine you ever saying that. Mm-hmm. And yet the Gay Liberation Network said that specifically about us. And yet, of course, it's Americans for Truth that's on the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group list, while no homosexual organization is on there. Judith, does that surprise you at all?
I'm stunned.
So we have the manipulation of hate. And last year, as I said, apparent homosexual activists, threw two big bricks through the windows of the Christian Liberty Academy, there has been no settled, that crime has not been settled, although, John, homosexual activists accused us of staging the crime, so isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And I told...
you're fortunate that nobody actually got hit by those bricks.
Yes, nobody got hit.
And Judith, but the message it sends even to...
That easily certainly could have happened. I mean, the breaking of the windows and so forth is a crime in itself still in the United States of America. And the position that takes in terms of that it's okay to engage in massive violence against those that have a body of information that is in conflict with something that one wishes to have delivered is standard operating procedure, with hate groups. And so, that's what, if you want to address the whole issue of hate,
The thing is obvious.
And it's very sad.
And Judith and John both, it's obvious, too, to me, that had this been a brick attack against a homosexual group holding a banquet at some facility, I think there would probably be a lot more attention by the press and
Time Magazine, Newsweek.
It would be a national story.
You know, this wasn't just against your group, though, Peter or Scott Lively. I mean, this sends a message of intimidation to the parents that of children that attend that school. So, that's very intimidating to show up on Monday with your child and you see the windows boarded up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Judith, before we get to your main talk, and I was going to say the talk, the title of the talk is going to be Pedophilia, the Next New Normal. I want to play a quick clip. Something happened this past week, which is very troubling to me, and we are non-political. I'm going to preface this by saying Americans for Truth is nonpartisan. We don't take a position in the election, who to vote for. We criticize Democrats. We criticize Republicans. We criticize independents. We are not one of those groups that put the Republic that worship the Republican Party. So play this clip by Paul Ryan. He was asked about his position on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, on Obama, on the new law passed mainly by Democrats and a few Republicans that allowed open homosexual in the military. John, play that clip.
I talked to a lot of good friends of mine who are combat leaders in the theater, and they just didn't think the timing of this was right to do this in the middle of when the armed troops are in harm's way in combat. Now that it's done, we should not reverse it. I think that would be a step in the wrong direction because people have already disclosed themselves. So I think this issue's past us. It's done, and I think we need to move on.
Now, you guys, this to me is very troubling. We have the Republican vice presidential candidate saying it's a step in the wrong direction to try to repeal a law that homosexualized our military. John, this to me would be analogous to saying it's a step in the wrong direction to try to repeal Roe v. Wade.
Exactly right. Yeah, you nailed it on the head there.
And I put a column out I've never actually heard this speech. It's a running joke I have with Brian Kamiker. There's a rabbi named Rabbi Meyer Schiller. He's an Orthodox rabbi in New York. And he gave a speech in which he talked about the problem with conservatives. And it's Kvetchin retreat. We complain about... you're Jewish, Judith, so you understand. You complain about a loss, a political loss, and then what do? You just retreat. And here we have, I thought this was a major plank of the Republican Party. This was a major social issue, John, the homosexualization of our military. But now that it's over, or apparently to many Republicans now are saying, hey, forget about that issue. Don't try to repeal it. But yet on Obamacare, it's all about the repeal. Mm-hmm. But the open homosexuals in the military, forget about it.
There's no logical consistency there. If it's bad for the military before it's passed, it's bad for the military after it's passed. There's no logical consistency.
And Judith, you know what? I just got a letter from a guy I really respect, Republican, and he was upset at me for writing about this. And so I think what's happened is in the Republican Party, at some level, some of the Republican, some top Republicans now think that the path to victory is to sort of either ignore or just go against the social conservative agenda. I mean, don't talk about homosexuals in the military. Don't talk about pro-life. Don't talk about pornography. Just talk about the money issues. And
but Peter, that's been going on for at least, 30 years, as far as I can remember. Well, let's say 25, perhaps. And, come on, Romney, okay, I'll probably end up, I don't know. But, when he was in Massachusetts, you couldn't find a more pro-homosexual activism or homosexist activism than that which was espoused by Romney, who then opened the door to preaching in the classroom about homosexuality and its activities, as all of its activities, since none of it can be normal sexual conduct, then we have to teach the children about the abnormal sexual conduct. And under Romney, that was okay.
He once bragged about
the other problems.
He once infamously bragged in a debate with Ted Kennedy for Senate in Massachusetts. He once bragged that he would do more for gays than Ted Kennedy.
There you are. I mean, whatever you're going to say about Ted Kennedy, he confined himself to the opposite sex. As much as, and all kinds of members of the opposite sex. we have a moral, we won't even say that it's empty. We have a huge moral problem, and my last books have been focused on that, how we got to this point, because most people today, even only the ones my age, that is well into their 70s, I'm heading into the 80s.
I thought you were 49, Judith.
Yeah, I know how that looks. But it's just the way I look, right?
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, right.
But, no. But Judith, let me ask you something, and let me preface it by saying Judith's books. Judith's is the leading exposer of Alfred Kinsey. She has dedicated her life to, or part of her life at least, to exposing this fraud of Alfred Kinsey, who was, you know, who wrote Sexual Behavior in the Human Male. He was the first, or one of the first, quote, sexologists. Your last book is sexual.
The first.
He was the first sexologist. Okay.
In terms of establishing the field, the whole field is based on him.
Okay. Why don't you just give us a 1-minute description of who Alfred Kinsey was?
Well, he's a sexual psychopath. You know, we can begin by that. And that's at best. Alfred Kinsey was a closet pedophile, or pederast, actually, more likely, a preference for boys, and a sadomasochist. Who tortured himself regularly. I'm assuming he had some horrific experiences when he was young, because the rest of his life was spent engaged in the most bizarre activities, and the effort to seduce the nation into his activities. He's the founder of the concept of 10% of the population, 10 to 37% being homosexual. The bisexuality belief system is grounded in his research. All of the advocacies for homosexuality for years were based only on his so-called data. The American Psychiatric Association, at its big meeting in 73, I think it was, since you don't destroy the belief system of a nation and the laws of a nation just out of thin air, you have to destroy it out of something. And so since this country was grounded in the common law, which was biblical, we had to substitute science. Kinsey provided the science. He said...
Oh, hold on, Judith. Hold on right there. We got a break coming up. We're talking to Judith Reisman, who is our guest at our banquet at AFTA, Saturday, October 27th. We'll be right back after the break. Again, folks, I'm Pete LaBarber with Americans for Truth Hour. I'm here with John Kirkwood, who is a great pastor out in Bentonville, Illinois, and he's my partner on the show. And we're talking with Judith Reisman, who's our keynote speaker, Saturday, October 27th at Christian Liberty Academy. That's at 502 West Euclid Avenue in Arlington Heights, Illinois. It's a wonderful Christian school. Every year they give us the room for the banquet, and we've got Judith speaking. And I'm excited about that, because Judith Reisman has done more than any American to expose the sordid history of this scam history of how homosexuality and other sexual deviancies were mainstreamed. And Judith, let me repeat what you said. You said that it was based pretty much solely on Alfred Kinsey's work, the initial efforts to mainstream homosexuality in the culture. And you've commented, I have an article here in WorldNet Daily by Drew Zahn, in which you're quoted. You said 87%, this is incredible stuff, 87% of Alfred Kinsey. Now, here's a guy who was going around studying sex for the first time. You said 87% of his subjects were sex addicts, homosexuals, criminals, rapists, prostitutes, pedophiles, and prisoners. That's astonishing that this book was taken seriously.
Yeah, it really is. I was rather amazed. And let's not forget that the impact of Kinsey was more than enormous, because one of the key people that read his book, and who was a virgin at the time, a college fellow, was a guy named Hugh Hefner. And this guy, Hugh Hefner, read Kinsey and said, "Oh my goodness, everybody is doing all these sexual things, and I'm the only guy out here who's not having fun." And so he said he would be Kinsey's pamphleteer. And so another key person who read Kinsey at the time was Harry Hay. And Harry Hay was a communist in those years with several children, and he also was a closet homosexual. I don't know that he was a pederast. He identified himself.
He identified with NAMBLA later on in his career. He said, NAMBLA marches with me, he said.
With me, and there's a picture of him with the sign on that. Have you know? And he said, "Wow, if Kinsey says that 10% of the population is homosexual or are homosexualists, then we can create a whole movement because we can shift people's ideas away from what we do, which is sodomy, to who we are as a minority." And so that is, of course, what transpired. But Kinsey, when I got especially interested, of course, when it turned out that Dr. Alfred Kinsey of Indiana University, who has an institute named after him still there and still gets funding federally or state, depending on who, and also through philanthropy, Dr. Kinsey was involved in the sexual torture, and I use that word appropriately, torture, of up to 2,035 children. The majority of those were little boys. The youngest was 2 months of age.
Judith, on that point, could you just describe the tables that are found in sexual behavior in the human male?
Sure. If your library still carries old books, most libraries don't. You know, they don't believe in anything that existed prior to 1975 or 85 or 95, then go to the library and check this out with the Kinsey Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, Sexual Behavior in the Human Female. But Sexual Behavior in the Human Male has five separate tables, that is charts, graphs, in which the ages of these little children are written in the graph, and the timed orgasms, what he called orgasms, are next to the table. That is the two-year-old, how long it took this two-year-old to allegedly reach an orgasm, and that's what he calls it. A two-month-old, how long it took the two-month-old. And then how many of these so-called orgasms. Now, this what became the most highly cited book in the history of human civilization regarding sexuality. No book was ever cited internationally and nationally as much as Kinsey, and he changed all of our laws, which is why I'm at
America. And Judith, what angers me is that it took a Judith Reisman decades later to find and expose this. Where were the reporters and the where was somebody standing up and saying, wait a minute, this book that everybody is celebrating has data from a pedophile molesting babies. It's almost a spiritual thing how somehow that got that did not stop this book from gaining so much good coverage and everything.
Well, when everybody comes to the conference, you know, that you have planned, and listens to me, I will explain all that, you know, as to how that happened.
But let's talk about some politics, Judith.
That it continues today. Okay, it continues today. And we are talking about, quote, histories of people's torture of other people being sent to the Kinsey Institute today and being kept in their files.
And Judith, just let's think about this. We've got Jerry Sandusky. He's been appropriately reviled for what he's done. And yet you have Indiana University and the Kinsey Institute. I don't think Indiana University, John, would be considering forming the Jerry Sandusky Institute. Mm. Although Kinsey he allowed data from child the most disgusting thing, molesting a baby for sexual gratification, so called, and yet Indiana University they're still celebrating this monster named Alfred Kinsey,
and we're still funding them. And of course, the big key here is that when we talk about MAP. That is minor attracted persons.
Okay, what is that? What is MAP? Explain that.
MAP, minor attracted persons. Well, it's the recent iteration of massive pedophile clout, which comes right out of the success of the homosexual movement. And MAP stands for men and women who prefer to have sex with children, who want to have sex with children. And it's a pedophile, pederast organization.
I've called it NAMBLA with a PhD. This is just so disgusting, Judith. And that's why I'm so excited to have you here, because people need to see the connection. This group, Minor Attracted Persons, this Before You Act, they are employing the same tactics that were used to mainstream homosexuality. Mm-hmm. One of them is saying, "Oh, I was born that way, Judith. I was born with these feelings for minors, and how dare you? You heap opprobrium on these people, these poor people who were born that way." Where have we heard that before, John?
Yeah, you know, this is the thing that the left does, though. The left, liberal is now progressive because liberal has a stain on it. And so map, nothing. What's threatening about a map? You need a map. You need a map to find out where you're going. So, yeah, the first death throw of a civilization is the death of language. And we're seeing that in this movement.
And Judith, do you think they're going to succeed in creating some sort of sympathy for pedophiles?
No, well, they already have. Yeah, this is growing. You know, look, let's understand something. You have many pederasts and pedophiles in positions of power. I thought about writing a book years ago called Pedophiles in Power. You know, you don't get to where we are unless you have, so to speak, spies in the woodwork, you know? During World War II, some of our top people were working for the Russians, right? And they were advising Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you have to have people in power, in top positions of power, both in the military, by the way, in the church, and in the schools, in order to create the kind of...
So, Judith, you're saying, you know, this is, you can't get to this level of influence without people in high places, and of course we've seen that also with the homosexual movement and other movements. Judith, I want to read you a quote and get your response. This is a creepy quote. This is in a story by in WorldNet Daily. I think you might be quoted in this story as well. It's by Chelsea Schilling. It's titled, "Has the Normalization of Pedophilia Begun? Excuse me. And the person quoted is CNN's Don Lemon. He's the openly homosexual anchor who revealed that he was molested as a child, and we've called into question his so-called gayness. I mean, you have all these homosexual men who were molested as children, and yet they see no connection between that and their embrace of homosexuality. Well, here's Don Lemon's quote. He said, quote, "I know people are going to send me a lot of..." He's talking about Jerry Sandusky, the man who molested the boys at Penn State. He says, quote, "I know people are going to send me a lot of hate mail for this. I've never been one to take glee in anyone's demise. And when I saw Jerry Sandusky walk out in handcuffs, I did feel kind of a bit sorry for him. Even though I know the jury found him to do some horrific things, I was like, his life is over. All these young boys... it was terrible for them as well. There are no winners," unquote. That's CNN's Don Lemon. Isn't that kind of creepy, Judith?
Well, dear, of course it's creepy. I mean, you're looking at the defense of one's own experience, you know, abuse, yeah, and putting that upon others with empathy. It makes me very nervous because I can't help but wonder what this fellow is doing on his own when he's empathetic for and comparing what this Sandusky has done to these boys and suggesting that there's some kind of equivalency here.
Says it was terrible for them as well. In other words, John Lemon,
as
I'm
well,
not...
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
As well?
As well. So, yeah, and that's what's going on. And the academic world, being what it is today, has been trained over the years. And let's face it, look, we've been training children in the classrooms with sex education that we called sex education since the late 1960s.
Okay, hold that thought, hold that thought, Judith. We're coming back to another break. We're talking with Judith Reisman, who will be our speaker in Arlington Heights, Illinois, on October 27th. I hope you can make that banquet. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking to the great Judith Reisman. She's the author of at least four books. I don't know how many books you've written, Judith, but I'm going to read some of their titles. Kinsey, Sex and Fraud, The Indoctrination of a People. Her most recent book is Sexual Sabotage. She's also written Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences, and Soft Porn Plays Hardball. And Judith, you are one of the world's leading experts on the effects and pornography on the brain. But let's not get off this. We could go into that for a whole program. I'm fascinated at this quote by Don Lemon, a homosexual who said, you know, basically it was Sandusky. Yeah, it was terrible for the boys as well, but it was also terrible for Sandusky. Judith, talk about this process whereby people who are victims of pedophilia, of pederasts, like Don Lemon, who was molested as a boy by an older man, how their minds become twisted on this whole issue, and sometimes they become pedophiles. Talk about this process a little bit.
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, you could compare it to the Stockholm syndrome. When you all remember when Patty Hearst got kidnapped and she ended up carrying a gun and, you know, going along with her oppressors, with those who kidnapped her, and becoming part of their system and defending them, you know. So that was called the Stockholm syndrome, and it's very common that people who have experienced some kind of trauma in that regard will often end up defending the very people who have molested them and violated them. And it's very similar to what happens with a great deal of homosexualist experience. You're talking about the attempt to defend. Look, there's a lot of confusion on the part of the victim. When somebody is sexually molested, particularly as a child, there's an arousal state that they cannot explain. And that arousal state, they're told by our society, is sexual, because it goes from the brain down the central nervous system, spinal cord, into the reproductive organs. That's the way the conduit works. And so these poor folks, you know, and I've talked with incest victims who are trying to figure out how they could have been, quote-unquote, sexually aroused when they were in horror of what was happening to them, because there's a blend of horror, fear, shame with that arousal state that is normal there. But it's supposed to be normal for later on between a male and a female, hopefully in a marital, relationship. So we have a massive confusion because of the biology of the human body, the human brain, mind, memory. And that confusion is exploited by those who molest children and the rest of their lives. Many, 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 many victims who feel indeed horror and trauma at that initial experience will identify themselves with the oppressor, with the Stockholm syndrome, and believe that they are normally in that's normal for their state, and it's not. It's completely abnormal, but that can become part of one's identity. Now, when we look at this fellow who's an open homosexualist, who deals, you know, who's recognized, and he's a TV commentator and that sort of thing. Well, you're looking at a power person, a person in a position of power. And you have to ask yourself, who put him in a position of power? Why is he in that position? Why was Steiner, who was, I say his name correctly, who was the president at Penn State, why was he in a position of power when indeed he was a deviant also? Why were all these people in positions of power. And when what happens is that when you have a small cadre of people who are deviant, they cluster, birds of a feather flock together, they cluster together, and they give each other positions of power, whether they're judges, whether they're presidents, whether they're doctors, whoever they are. And the next thing we know in our given society, laws are being made that are shaped by people who sway other people, and those people who are doing the swaying don't reveal their special interests and so forth. So I don't know if that explains this to you very
quickly, but we have
diagrams for it when I lecture.
And it's very interesting, Judith, and I also want you to touch on this phenomenon. Now, we have another homosexual, Larry Brinken, who is a celebrated homosexual in San Francisco. He has been arrested on child porn charges. This is the man who practically came up with the notion of domestic partnership. He had a day named after him. He was a human rights, so-called human rights worker in commission worker in San Francisco. He was a famous homosexual. Now he's busted on child porn, and we're talking infants, Judith. And it's all very sick, but I want you to talk about the ideation factor of somebody like Don Lemon, who, you have many homosexual men, and it's not politically correct to admit this, to tell this story, but many homosexual men were victims of predators, of older men. As teenage boys, they were seduced into the lifestyle. For example, the whole situation in the Catholic Church with the homosexual predators who were, you know, engaged in these horrible acts with these altar boys, and not just the Catholic Church, everywhere, of course. And yet then you see these men like Don Lemon coming out and saying, I'm gay. And it's bizarre that they make no connection between the predator action against them when they were young and this homosexual identity. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I think it's a, if you will, a sort of normal identification process. The guy who molested them didn't walk in and just rape them. It's sort of like Tom O'Carroll, who describes how he wooed, how he wooed his victims. And the idea as a youngster that this person who says he loves me and who does these things to me, and again, let's go back to the arousal process. These kids can't begin to identify that arousal process appropriately. So they're being told that they were soliciting. I mean, I've dealt with boys who've explained to me what happened to them when they were seduced. Guys, you know, see them walking down the street, pick them up and say, you know, like to take you out for a hamburger. Kid goes with them for a hamburger. Everybody is oohing and eyeing over the kid's very bad, poetry or artwork or something. And the next thing you know, they move in on the kid, and the kid feels that he is homosexual, that he has been identified. They're telling him, you know, we could tell by the looks of by when you were walking that you were one of us.
Right.
And they, by the way, very often they don't do it flat out like that. They, you know, we could tell you were bisexual, we love everybody, that sort of thing. So there are all sorts of manipulative techniques to deal with the arousal state that is abnormal at that early age for this youngster. So the youngster can't make sense of this fear arousal that occurs in connection with this genital response mechanism. Kid can't separate that out. And when it is defined by the predator for him, that predator is the adult. That predator is the be-all, know-all guy. So, yeah, they will identify. And the rest of their lives, many of these guys, and we've known that for centuries, that people who are molested at a certain age will turn around and very often tend to molest others at the same age. They become arrested at that point of development. And that occurs with people who have molested girls and girls who have been molested, that sort of thing. So you're creating an environment in our society that so stimulates sexual activity so early, so far prior to puberty, prior to hormonal response mechanisms that are adequate to deal with it, that you're making people crazy. And they are crazy by definition, really, in many ways, and don't know what to do with this hysterically difficult arousal pattern that they feel, because then they turn around and look at other kids and they become aroused by other kids. We have a massive problem with juveniles sexually molesting other juveniles. Not just juveniles. We have a massive problem with them molesting children, young children. I'm dealing constantly with people who write to me about their sons or their daughters molesting their kin, their own sisters or brothers.
And, of course, pornography has a huge role in that as well.
You cannot separate pornography and, quote, sex education from the resulting dysfunctions that all of our children are experiencing to a greater or lesser extent. It's all intertwined. Of course it is.
Okay, Judith, I have an important question for you about this thing that you were just describing with the men and the boys. Randy Thomason, who's a pro-family activist out in California, great guy, he has raised concern about the bill that is on the desk of Governor Jerry Brown, which would ban reparative therapy for young people, or you'd have to get permission. I can't remember the exact details, but the whole point is to essentially ban parents from taking their son or daughter to reparative therapy to reverse this homosexual inclination that they have. Randy has made the point. What about the boys who are the victims of pederasts, of pedophiles? And then that boy, like you're saying, he makes this connection. He thinks, hey, I must be gay. I must have been part of the factor that this man made the moves on me. And then
absolutely.
Now
that's
under
what they're being told.
Well, do you share Randy's concern that because of this law, this oppressive law that the homosexualists have pushed, trying to ban treatment for people with this unwanted homosexual attraction, that it will now a boy becomes a victim of, say, an older man, a pedophile, and he won't be able to get treatment to reverse that homosexual ideation that's going on in that kid's mind?
Well, I think that's the design of the bill. Let's be frank, okay? That's the design of the bill. There are people in high places, again, powerful people, who do not want children to reverse to get straightened out. They don't want that. They do want to increase their power, and their power is based in an increase in the numbers of people who self-identify as homosexualists or bisexual or transgender and so forth and so forth. So the power lay in the population. The power lay in increasing the number of people self-identify as dysfunctional, but think that that's normal.
Okay, stop.
The bill in California is designed to increase that power structure, the voting block, if you will.
Yes. Okay, we're talking to Judith Reisman, who is a visiting professor at the Liberty University School of Law. We'll be right back after the break. And we're back with Judith Reisman. I'm here with John Kirkwood, who's a pastor in Grace Gospel Fellowship Church. John, I had to mess it up.
That's okay. I'm a big fan of Liberty University.
Yes. And
Judith Reisman is a visiting professor of law.
Yes. So is Judith. She's a big fan of Liberty, and Liberty is very lucky, or blessed, I should say, to have you as a visiting professor of law there, Judith. And how is that going, by the way? How do you find teaching at Liberty?
Oh, I love it. I love it. The students are incredibly clever and very, just really wonderful kids. And in the law, I only really know too much about the law students. And most of them are either homeschooled, and I mean properly homeschooled, or they've come out of Christian schools, and their reading skills, their knowledge of history, their knowledge of the Constitution and the foundation of the United States of America is extraordinary. It is almost, I would guess, something like what we had back in about 1900. So we're doing quite well with with those students. They're excellent.
Yes, and this is part of the hope that we have, is that the people who are bypassing the educational system. Judith, really quick, and then John has a question for you. And so essentially what you're saying is this law, there are sectors of society that don't want kids, little boys and girls, to get help with unwanted homosexual attractions. And we always said it was coming. We said that when the homosexualists, which are people, you know, promoting homosexuality in our culture, when they get the power, it's sort of similar to the Muslims. When they get the power, that's when they start oppressing freedom. And, John, it is an outrage that you as a parent in California, if this bill is signed by Governor Jerry Brown and the gay activists are pushing hard for it to be signed, you as a parent, if you were in California, you could not have the freedom to give the treatment you want for your son who might have been molested by a pedophile or by this juvenile. Judith's talking about this juvenile, these juvenile predations, where, say, a teenage boy seduces another teenage boy, or, say, a 12-year-old boy into homosexuality. You would now be restricted. Your options would be limited because they want that idea to get out there that the child is gay.
And this is why I say that the greatest threat to freedom, I normally say religious freedom in the United States, is the homosexual movement. Because they won't be satisfied until they control everything, and this is another example of how they know better than the parents, and they're going to dictate to you what can. But you know, California's been doing this now with their textbooks and so forth, so I'm not surprised. What needs to happen is parents need to be outraged about this.
But, you know, parents, of course, have been so conditioned, too, over these many, since the 1960s, late 60s. Again, the sex education in the classrooms, children have been learning in the classroom since the 60s that homosexual conduct may really be normal. And then it went from may really be to really is, and from that to all sorts of other dysfunctional behaviors and the transvestite sort of thing and so forth. And then between that and their being bombarded in the media, we have just not even given our kids a snowball's chance in to be able to get through healthfully. So, again, you're looking for a major lobby. Always, you're looking for people who will control the way you want things controlled. And you're correct, John. It's not a question of religious freedom. It's a question of freedom, period. End of story. And one of the things I have objected to for years is that the conservative movement has fought so many battles based on quote-unquote religious freedom without understanding that it's the freedom of the entire nation to grow, you know, healthfully, that is at risk once you control the sexual conduct of people and turn them into many dysfunctional kinds of behaviors. You no longer have freedom for anybody.
Yeah, and Judith, you're absolutely right. And we've long said that it's not just Christians. It's not just the right of Christians and, say, Orthodox Jews to oppose homosexuality and to not be forced to have, for example, their small business use their profits to provide benefits for so-called homosexual married couples. It's everybody. Everybody has the freedom, John. And now they're moving from California. If this bill is signed in California, the next step we hear from is New Jersey. They're going to – and Judith – their goal is to ban, this is really stunning, is to ban reparative therapy because they don't agree with it. And they say, and maybe there have been people, you know, it doesn't always work. There are people who don't want it to work. But there have been people, I'm not a big proponent of reparative therapy in the sense that in my personal experiences, the healthiest ex-gays, people who have left the lifestyle, are people who've been born again Christians. I mean, a lot of people like that have never used reparative therapy, Judith. The fact is, people have left homosexuality behind in their life, just like people have left all sorts of sin and dysfunction behind in their life. They've overcome, and how dare the state come in and say, no, we're gonna ratify the homosexual activist view of things, and we don't like that treatment. You know, it's stunning tyranny that's on the horizon. Now it's actually being implemented.
Oh, well, yeah, and it's been coming down the pike, everybody. We all knew that. And the approach to it, who was it that described conservatives as the most, I've forgotten the terminology, but, you know, tiptoeing through the barbed wire, just tip, 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 tip. You're talking about, come on, it all will come down to sexual violations against our children. That's what it has to be. And the idea of we're going to vote for who we think is going to, you know, help us in one way or another, it doesn't matter. If we've allowed our children to be so sexually dysfunctional, look, I'm looking at, you know, Sex and God at Yale. It's a new book out. It's worth your read, Sex and God at Yale. And it's not just Yale, but all your Ivies and most of our colleges, in which our young girls are engaged in the hookup culture, our youngsters in high school and younger are sending, you know, nude or semi-nude pictures of themselves over the web and to their boyfriends, who then, you know, send it to other people.
So, Judith, what's happening is this sex education culture that has been foisted on these kids mm-hmm. has now mm-hmm. succeeded in making girls more slutty. I mean, that's what they're...
Girls are, look, you know, girls, whether they recognize it or not, okay, want to nest, okay? I mean, that's their natural inclination. They want somebody to love them. They do want somebody to protect them, even if they're being attacked, you know, and they're not big enough to go themselves. And, of course, now we're talking about controlling guns, right? So they don't have their gun even. And so, you know, they want a mate, and they want a mate who'll stick by them when they get old and ugly. Oh, well, not saying ugly, but, you know, old. And they want somebody to help rear those children, that sort of thing. So girls will do whatever is the need of the day. And if they think that they will manage somehow to, and it's not that this is a conscious think, but if they think that by sending pictures of themselves or dressing like, you know, in ways that streetwalkers did not even dress, right? That will achieve it. That's what they're going to do. And we, as a nation, have laid it out for them to self-destruct. And then we wonder what's wrong. And we mm-hmm. and our guys are being impotent. Our guys are incredibly impotent. You know, they've been using pornography since they're quite young. And by the way, this is religious guys as well as non-religious guys. They've been watching the pornography. The pornography renders them impotent instantly, just about instantly. They have no comprehension of what that means. You know, potency is with your own power. And if these boys start looking at pornographic materials on the web, as they were with the magazines earlier, Grandpa and and Daddy, then they're not able to relate to a real human being without putting that picture that some guy put in their brains in front of their eyes. I mean, you're talking about impotence for sure. So our guys are impotent, and all the research is confirming that, by the way, recently, that this activity, that the self-pleasuring, the self-pleasuring activity, allied with pornography, is creating an impotent community of males. And that's in Japan, that's in France, that's in Italy, that's here, that's everywhere. And who do they blame? They blame the females. They don't blame the guy who's making the pictures or themselves.
They don't blame Hugh Hefner,
so we're
huh?
Looking at, and the research I did on Hefner, I have to remind you that when I was talking in the Netherlands and I said that Hugh Hefner had been promoting child sexual abuse through child pornographic cartoons and pictures since the 1950s, that Hefner sued me in the Netherlands. And guess who won in Amsterdam, for heaven's sake, you know? So if I could win proving that Hugh Hefner was promoting child sexual abuse through cartoons and images since the 50s, if I could win that in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, which is the center of pedophilia in Europe, then we could win that anywhere. So
I always found that fascinating about your work, Judith, that you were, before anybody, you know, you were bringing out these cartoons, John. This is, you know, where you have all the cartoons in Playboy were promoting the idea of the sexual, you know, the sexualization of girls, and how creepy, you know. And did that evolve? I mean, when did that start? I mean, I'm sure that wasn't in the initial Playboy, Judith. What did he just get worse? It's like, was it like all pornography? It gets worse and worse. What happened there?
Well, you have to remember Hugh Hefner. If he said he was going to be Kinsey's pamphleteer. And if Kinsey said children are sexual from birth, right?
Right.
Then this would indeed affect the way he viewed the depiction of children or the use of children. And so, yeah, it began in 1954, very deliberately, with images of little boys who were just observing adults in some sort of sexual interaction. But within 10 years, there was a little girl, and that was in fairy tale, who was, again, implicit but not explicit, and by 1978 it was explicit, and it was cartooned, you know, fairy tale where Dorothy's being, has just been sexually violated by all three of her little friends in full color, full page. So this was a deliberate seduction of the consumer, so that he would not realize what he was seeing, and it and what was being embedded in his brain.
Yeah,
and that went on.
Judith, let me ask you. We're over time here, but I got to ask you. Talk about for a minute what you know. All the rapes, the pornography is linked to the abuse of women and all the ill effects.
And children. Of course, pornography is directly linked, and there's no news out there anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the liberal reporter would say, "Oh, you know, that wouldn't occur to them that it's pornography that's a big part of the problem with these girls being raped and this abuse of women."
It occurs to them. They know full well, but they're users. It's like the sex educators who say it doesn't exist. Well, they're using. You know, the psychiatrists who say, "Well, there's no connection." Go look in their closets and look on their web pages. No, the users are going to say it doesn't cause any harm, mm-hmm. Even if they themselves have been sexually molesting children. They're certainly going to defend it, and if they haven't sexually molested children or women or whoever it is already, they're still going to defend it because they're part of the problem. So, no, I mean, you know, it's like Freud said years ago. He always accused anybody who disagreed. He said, you know, you're just covering up your own desires. Well, in this regard, yes, it's true.
Yeah. And we got to go here, Judith. We're over time. But, you know, Don Lemon, we were talking about earlier, the guy who's openly gay, so-called, at CNN, but he was also molested as a child. He's one of the guys, I believe, the icons in Gay History Month, which supposedly begins next month. John, I know you're going to be celebrating. You got the special calendar, right? Judith, you got your gay calendar to see all the icons. But what does it say when you make Don Lemon, who is this victim, now he's sort of in this, he's a victim of a pedophile. Now he's out putting out the idea that gay is good and everything. He is one of the icons who could be studied in school, Judith, for Gay History Month.
Yeah, well, a good now. We've done extensive research on that, and when I speak at your conference, I'll show some of our findings in terms of who's been called gay and the language that's in the homosexualist dictionary for boys, 270 some words or 64 words, 264 words for how to have sex with a boy and that sort of thing. You're talking the Stockholm Syndrome, you're talking about identifying with your predator, that standard operating procedure, and the more boys and girls who are molested, the larger the voting population for homosexualist belief systems.
Well, we're going to leave it right there, Judith. Thank you so much for being our guest. We'll have you on next week, and we're looking forward to people all around Illinois and Chicagoland. We got people flying in from both coasts, it looks like. We hope to have a big crowd for you. Judith Reisman will be speaking Saturday, October 27th at Christian Liberty Academy. Go to the website AmericansForTruth.org. Sign up for this banquet. We're encouraging people to get a table of 10. It's only $15 to get in advance, so a table of 10 is $150. This is going to be a wonderful presentation, and we're very much looking forward to you coming, Judith.
And I'm very much looking forward to people showing that they are still Americans and buying those tables and coming to hear me speak.
Okay, Judith. We'll see you. Talk to you next week. God bless.
Thanks. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Peter. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye. You've been listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with Pete LaBarbera and John Kirkwood. All our interviews are available archived at AmericansForTruth.org. That's AmericansForTruth.org. Also, don't forget our banquet coming up Saturday, October 27th at Christian Liberty Academy in Arlington Heights, Illinois, featuring Dr. Judith Reisman. That's Saturday, October 27th. Please return to our website, make a donation, AmericansForTruth.org. There's a donate button. Donate to our cause. Help us to continue with these interviews. And thanks for listening. God bless.